Yo,
Ayo.
crazy as shit, bro. So my parlay might hit. So I took the Pacers money line over the Bucks tonight. Pacers are
Oh.
down three. Tyrese Halliburton hits a fadeaway three, gets fouled, makes the shot.
Oh.
There's like just a few two. I don't know how many seconds really. Maybe 1 point something, but. Yeah, the Bucks are challenging the call right now. I pray to God it stands and the Pacers win. Obviously, I'm not watching right now because I'm on the show, but goddamn.
Got money on the line, I
I
understand.
got money on the line on that game. I got money on the line. I had money on the line on every game today.
Okay. But the
So
parlay is
Cleveland.
about to hit.
The Brooklyn Nets covered that 14 and a half.
Okay.
Pistons covered that 14 and a half. The Pelicans are covering the seven that they're given right now.
Okay.
They're leading the Clippers, actually, which is pretty crazy. Zion's return. Zion is looking really good, I must say.
Interesting. Interesting.
And yeah, just waiting for the Pacers to hopefully not get Vegas.
Because you know that's exactly how it
Yep.
would end too.
Actually, we're gonna overturn this call, and it's an offensive foul. Giannis will be
Ooh.
shooting two free throws.
Sorry about that. And then you just look at the camera when they say that shit, just like,
Fuck your
sorry.
parlay.
Fuck your parlay. Exactly. We're rooting for you, man. Gotta get that
Man.
money. Gotta get that bag.
Oh man, I'll have it on the side, just chilling here. Just I'll update y'all.
We'll know if you get real sad or real happy in just a few minutes here, how it
No,
goes.
I've learned not to let betting mess with my emotions because I can't control what the players do. I can't control what the refs call. I can only predict it, and that's what I'm pretty much doing. I'm predicting what's going to happen. And so if I guess right, I guess right. If I guess wrong, I guess wrong. It is what it is.
It's a refreshing take. I wish I
Yeah.
shared the same kind of restraint when it comes to gambling, so I just don't do it unless I'm in a casino. That's
Hey, that's
really
fair.
it.
That's fair, man. I don't blame you one bit. But you know what? I noticed my lighting's a little off and I don't have my liquor with me. So I'm going to fix my light, grab my liquor,
Oof.
and I'll be right back. All right. You can go ahead and talk to the people. I'll still be able to hear you. You might
That's a
be able to
double
hear
whammy.
me.
I mean, I probably could. I'm gonna tell the people what I gotta say just from the last few days here. And I haven't done a public service announcement in a long time, so we won't call it this, but just a pet peeve of mine was at the dentist office last week. I get a little dental anxiety here and there. Was waiting for my appointment, and there's a woman at the end of the row of seats that I'm sitting in, and she's not elderly, but definitely in her, 50s or 60s or so. And she's sitting there on her phone. And for some reason, I'm like just minding my business. And then all of a sudden, I start hearing her fucking phone. Whatever YouTube she's playing is blaring loud. And then she gets a phone call and she's on speakerphone the whole time. Keep in mind, this is a small dental clinic and we're just sitting in the lobby. It's just her and myself. My kids were in their dental appointments already. So I'm just sitting there minding my business in the quiet. And this girl is having a full-blown speaker conversation on her phone and then goes right into a max volume YouTube clip or a TikTok. I have no idea. But if I was going to have a PSA, it would be something remotely similar to this. Don't be that person invading everyone's fucking ear space. I'm so sick of people not having boundaries and shit. I don't want to hear your weak ass YouTube video. I don't care what you're watching, but I shouldn't have to hear it. And if you think I'm the problem because I didn't bring earbuds with me in a dental office, no, you're the problem. Respect other people's fucking boundaries and take the shit outside if you just have to hear it at max volume. I don't need to hear all that. It's none of my business. Keep your YouTubes and your speakerphone conversations to yourself. Please and thank you. Welcome back. What'd you pour up?
I actually poured up my favorite, that Boosey, that brown brown.
Doucet.
But
Brown, brown.
I was listening to your story and I completely concur. Motherfuckers need to stop being nosy and start nosing their own and minding their own business.
Exactly.
Part one, part two, second part of that means doing that your fucking selves.
Right. I'm just like, I'm sitting there and I'm looking around like, are you gonna turn that down at all? No, we all just get to share in whatever the hell you're listening to. I'm cool. Cool. Thank God it wasn't anything like inappropriate because then I would have to say something. But ever since I started working from home, I swear I had less tolerance for bullshit and for people. So, like, we had a gorgeous day Yesterday was what, 67 degrees out of nowhere? And I was like, whoa, beautiful. Most people like me, we put the shorts on and turn the grill on. You know, fuck it. But at the very least, I was like, well, let's take the dog for a walk. Let's get the kids on the rollerblades. You know, it's a beautiful day. Let's go enjoy it. So we're walking around our block, getting the dog some exercise. And then Sully is on his rollerblades, you know, maybe a few feet ahead of us, and Sydney's behind with me with the dog. And out of nowhere, we're like turning a corner, and this gigantic fucking black, it had to be a black mastiff or something, just a huge dog comes running out at Sully. And I'm like, whoa. And it's like barking at us and stuff. Clearly it was eyeing us up for a while because Toast is out there with us. But like, it's barking at Sully, and I'm over there like, okay, just calm down. Don't react or panic or run or anything. Not to mention you're on rollerblades, so you're not going anywhere. Because we're going uphill as it happens too. So I'm just like, you know, don't panic, but I'm getting kind of big, and Toast is trying, I'm trying to keep Toast back from going after this dog and shit. And this dog has no leash on, no nothing. We're just like, whoa, what the fuck? So we're standing there and I'm looking around like, whose dog is this? And a woman comes down out of the house and it's just like not saying much. And I'm looking at her like, okay, your dog is like cornering us right now, and you're clearly like a third the size of the fucking St. Bernard you fucking decided to bring into this neighborhood. And so she's like trying, I guess is the word, to corral the dog back into the house. Again, no leash, no invisible fence, so it's just roaming the fuck around. And I'm just like standing there with my family, like trying not to snap. I'm trying my hardest not to get on TMZ, not to be, you know, that N-word, you know, keep my cool in front of the kids and shit. But this girl was pissing me off because this dog was not listening to her. So he's just like not even saying anything, just trying to like maneuver it back to the house from like 10 feet away. And it's just walking in the street, walking to the neighbor's house. They have kids outside in the neighbor's house. It's walking up to the kids and growling and shit. And I was like, holy shit. Like, are you gonna, I started saying, like, are you gonna get your dog or what? Like, and she's like ignoring me, just oblivious. And I'm like, what the fuck? So I just kind of get the kids and like corral them up the street to back to our house safely. But like, people these days, again, boundaries with your phones and your dogs. Mind your own business and keep your fucking dog leashed up. At least put it on a fucking spike in the front yard or something. But just willy-nilly, people have lost their fucking minds. All
this
sense.
This is exactly why I just can't do it. I don't know how you do it, man. I would have ended her. I would have offed her.
It's a lot of patience. Yeah, like, it's a lot of setting an example. Trust me, if this was me like 20 years ago, maybe a different story. But
man, like
I'm too old to be ended up in jail because someone's dog, bro.
Yo, how do you not have control of your own dog?
That I don't know. Clearly, the dog is the man of the house.
Clearly.
From the look of the woman, because I'm like, this is a tiny, tiny woman and a very large dog who she could not have cared what that woman was saying. She was like, I'm going to do my own thing. I'm not going home. Fuck this.
And I'd be just like that dog.
Exactly. So that was, it was fine. It was fine. We rallied for the rest of the nice day. And that's when I started sending you videos. And even on, yeah, Sunday, you know, trying to watch basketball and the kids want to play video games and stuff. So I do want to show you one more video. I sent you one that you watched. There's another one that you haven't watched from the series. But for since I wasn't talking to the audience at the point, I've been bringing my kids into the martial arts realm lately. They've been asking. I've been waiting until they're a little old enough because some of those older martial arts movies and things are a little, you know, not so PG. So it has been nice. They have now seen, you know, The Last Dragon. They've seen Three Ninjas 1 and 2. Now Sully has seen Sidekicks, which is a very underrated Karate Kid knockoff starring Chuck Norris. So he has been just on a tear of martial arts. So naturally, I figured, you know, they're both gamers. Introduced them to fighting games. It's about the time I got into, you know, Mortal Kombat back in my day. So I think it was time. And, you know, Sid's got aggression she can probably deal with, too. And I was like, cool, let's see what they can do. So that's what that kind of led to, was me showing them the ropes on a few basics, but letting them kind of just figure it out on their own. And Sully went down to the basement and played his VR for a little bit. And for Sid, I looked at her and I said, you know, he's in the basement playing VR. That's like an hour in the lab you can get in Street Fighter 6. Just saying. I got it. So a part of me kind of egged it on. I was like, you know, I'm going to let him play too, but if you want to get a leg up and show him something, and you know, she she'll relish that fucking chance. So she got a good hour of practice before he came up to start playing. And that's why I showed you that video, and it got real intense out of nowhere. But there's a rubber match because Sully won one. Sydney whooped the dog shit out of him the first game. Oh, my God. He was like, how do you kick? And she's over there doing combos and shit. So I was pretty proud. Not going to lie about that. But there is a rubber match. I mean, I loved it, you know. I got to show you the rubber match, though. One apiece. They had to fight. And I have the video ready for your analysis because it was pretty incredible.
Let's get it.
There we go.
Here we go at the Foster residence.
Yes, it will be me in the background trying to be a DJ, like it's NBA Street Volume 3. No mercy. No
mercy. Ryu versus Cammy.
Yes. She's a big Cammy person. He got into Ryu real quick, so like that was kind of their natural characters. But here we go.
Jab, jab. Ooh. Ooh.
See that corkscrew kick, man. She just nailed
it. Oh.
Wow.
Oh.
Jesus.
She hit him with the
like a swing around her karana DDT combo. I don't know what that was. How do you even do that?
Oh.
That's a Wonder Boy combo.
Literally, yes.
Pause button. Man.
Oh.
Man.
Yeah.
What was that corkscrew?
She's got natural ability.
Okay, yeah. She finds a couple moves, yeah, and she does the couple moves.
Yeah. Right. The timing is really It's really good.
Oh, well, good block.
But then he started learning how to block.
Oh, my goodness.
Ooh, counter. Oh, my God.
Good.
Oh, Lord. My God.
He's wrecking him.
Do something, Zoe.
Now he's like, now he came like back that. Here.
Keep it up. Like this. There
ooh,
you go. Oh.
Ooh, roundhouse. Ooh, roundhouse.
Eating those kicks, bro. Oh.
Yeah, I couldn't stop picking him up.
There you go, Sully.
Oh, God.
Okay, 1-1. 1-1 with the comeback win. With the comeback win.
Final round. Nice.
Oh, first blood. Sit. Oh.
Okay.
Oh.
She was still getting them.
Oh, that corkscrew again. Oh. Jab.
Wow. She's really good at that.
Oh, jab. Oh, see, he needs to follow it up.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes! Oh, that big boot. The big boot and jab combination wins it.
Oh, man. He got redemption. But oh my goodness, man. Me sitting there just like watching all that, I'm like, I was taken back like 30 years. It was crazy.
It's like you versus you.
And pretty much, right? Like, oh my God. I went a couple rounds with her too. And I mean, I had to show her a few things, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Take it easy on her a little bit. But yeah, man, I think this natural ability, I'm like kind of tap into this a little bit. I feel like a stage mom, like a dance mom almost. And I'm like, dude, I could train her. Get some fucking tournaments, make some cash, like full Mr. Miyagi with this chick. But I think we got a hidden talent in the fighting game realm here.
She has a good feel for combos already. So that's something Sully doesn't have. You could tell.
Exactly.
You could tell. Because it's like those two jabs land, and if he just like launches some type of fucking Hadouken or fucking Shoryuken or something off of those two jabs,
right,
then we're talking.
Exactly. But
that's all he has to add.
Yeah, it's not much on that character, but with Cammy, I'm like, that's a complicated character for her to be doing all these damn combos. What the fuck?
Yeah, so, very complex.
Mm-hmm. Think of some untapped aggression that we could make.
Oh,
some,
you think?
Maybe a little bit.
Aggression.
Maybe a little bit. So
every time I'm over, she just wants to throw hands.
Yes, exactly. It's just something about you. She just wants to punch you in the face. So whatever that is, I can harness that and make her into a threat. And I don't mean just video games. Just as a woman, she'll be able to punch someone in the face and ask questions later. I like
that. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, there you go.
I like that. That's, we're learning real lessons here, folks. Well, I mean, that's easy for me to transition into everyone's favorite moment of the show now because it's brand new, and that is my tick of the week.
Time to make someone 1% more famous. It's the tick of the week.
Ooh.
And this one's fun because I have a two-part tick of the week. Whoa.
Ooh.
This one is from Darthamin. And what he's explaining to us are the new hats that were designed by Major League Baseball. And the designs are hilarious. And we're going to review some of those. So listen up.
Major League Baseball came out with these new overlap hats where the primary logo is overlapping over the name in the background. Example, here's the Cubs hat. You see it has the primary logo that Cubs C overlaps over this in Chicago, and it looks perfect. And I can't imagine how it wouldn't work perfectly for every other team. Let's start with the Texas Rangers. They put their Texas T primary logo right over the X in Texas, giving us Tetas.
He is so enthusiastic.
Seattle's big-ass S overlaps over the middle of America, giving us Massive.
Hey, Massive. Man, I got my masses. Would you my master now?
Here we have the Astros. They have their primary logo, the H.
Yo, rewind that, Chris Rockland.
Massive.
Hey, man, I got my masses. Would you my master now?
Here we have the Astros. They have their primary logo, the H, over the middle of Astros, giving us assholes.
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 Standing around, finger-popping each other's assholes.
We're not finger-popping each other's assholes.
This is what the Angels came up with.
Classic movie.
The anal.
Analyze.
I've mostly just been doing anal.
Anal. Anal is.
And now there's more, because somebody else named Foolish Bailey decided to look at most of the hats that came out. So we're going to review more of those.
Ashos.
Ashos.
Anals. Athastics.
Athastics.
Massers.
Tetas. Tetas. Squeeze.
Shisoxigo.
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 Guakians. The Doit.
The Doit. Oh, that's the best one.
Roxols. Twittins. Oles.
The Oles.
Bobone.
Bobone.
Yannies.
Oh.
Ritzbe.
Ritzbus? The
Blies.
Lies.
Braze.
The Brazes.
Mimis?
The Mimis.
New York.
Oh.
Oh.
The Fippies.
Narwhals.
The Narwhals.
Chicago. Sin Caddy.
The Sin Caddies.
Sin Caddy.
Burrs.
That Burrs one is terrible. Damn it, Burrs.
Carslows.
Carslows.
Ariana.
Yeah.
Ariana.
Colcrado Rares. Nola Airs.
Oh my God.
Pastes.
Pastes.
San Francisco.
Who approved these? Who approved these?
I don't know why the MLB always has the weakest and most gimmickiest apparel.
I don't get it.
Although, didn't they have those pants one time?
Yes, we talked about it on the show where they had the baseball pants, and they went through, I think, Fanatics, and it was like three like shades too transparent, and you could literally see like
their jock strap,
the jock strap, and more. If they wore a jock strap, you could see the whole fucking kit and caboodle down there. So MLB is just, oh my God. But funny enough, I would totally buy a Tetas hat. Except it's blue and red. I can't pull blue and red off. But people have actually wanted that hat. MLB already pulled the Tetas hat off their store.
See, they're smart. Okay. I give them that. They got some balls for trying this shit. And they're smart because they realize this shit ain't going to work ever.
Or they're stupid because the Tetas hat was going to be the one that sold more than any other hat they had. Who wasn't going to buy that? Everybody wanted that hat. I looked at all the comments. They're like, yeah, I definitely would have rocked the Tetas hat. Come on, man. That's, as soon as you saw that, you should have bought it because that's a collector's item now. If you have one, sell that for 300% markup now. Fuck man. It.
Tetas.
The Texas Tetas. And with that, let's get this Tetas on the road, shall we?
Hey, yo, Kalina.
I'm on my lunch break.
Get your dumb ass out here and cue the fucking music.
Where we're headed, no one knows. But if you need some friends, rely on the Fat Bunch.
Welcome to the Bank Bros Show, My name is Siege. That guy's Rizzy. Back again with another episode. Now, for those of you who are going to call me out for saying last week in the last episode, saying, oh, this one's going to be our second year anniversary episode. Going to be a lot of special stuff we're going to do, and I'm not going to tell you what it is. We decided to hold off about a week on that one, folks, because sports comes first on this show. Pause. Anyway, so a lot has occurred in the last 48 hours that have caused us to completely change course on what this episode was going to be, and we got to get all into it. Plus, we got UFC on the docket as well that we got to talk about. So all of that being said, stay with us for next week. 2-year anniversary will come up. Very special. Lots in store for you. We're not going to tell you what it is still. Oh. Stick with us. Because we got shit poured up already. Let's talk about the UFC. You were saying it was more of a mid show. How did you feel about the whole show in general?
I would stand by it. It was exactly what I expected it to be. Nothing over the top, not trash, not great. Somewhere in between, like a 6 and an 8.
I think that's fair. Predictable doesn't always mean like bad, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, we got a handful of finishes. We got some pretty good decision fights, and I thought it was a solid pay-per-view outing for the UFC.
Yeah, I agree. So let's get into the results here, because there are a lot of them. But we can start with King Green and Mauricio Rufi. How did it all go down, sir?
Man, this one ended pretty quick, man. Rufi came out, and he noticed right away with the hands down, he's going to react too slow for these kicks. Caught him with that spinning axe kick, I think it was.
Yeah.
And folded him, ended it. That was it. 2 minutes into the first, I think it was.
Good Lord. Like, it was nasty. I think it was like he tagged him with that right hand, and then he kind of like a set up like that fake lead hook, and then that spinning kick. Just King Green was face down the fucking mat, man. Blowing bubbles.
Jeez. It did not look pretty, man. That was vicious.
Nasty. Nasty work. So, yeah, that was a nice win for one of these fighting nerds that are just taking the UFC by storm. But Rufi is talented. My yes. goodness. I can't remember what the fuck round we said he was going to win in.
Yeah, I forgot what round I said. Right. But I said finish. I forgot if you said finish.
I'm pretty sure I said finish too. So, yeah. Lights out for King Green. My God. next up, Amanda Lemos and Yasmin Lucindo.
This one, I thought Lemos, coming off of her last fight in which she lost and she looked pretty sluggish, she controlled this entire fight. She took control of the center of the octagon. I thought landed the more significant shots, meaning the more powerful damage inflicting shots. And also she surprisingly dominated on the ground in control time.
Yes, I noticed that.
And she dominated her way to a decision win, like we said.
Exactly. Yeah, and Lucindo, for all rights, did try to come back in the third. Made an effort of it. Yeah. But I agree. I was saying the experience was going to be the factor here. I think Amanda really proved that. Experience really paid off here. Definitely controlled the ground, which I didn't see coming. But for the first two rounds, yeah, just grinded her out. That was about it. That's all she had to do. So, yeah, not ho-hum, but well-earned win. But
well earned.
But we'll see what's next for Lemos, because she's right back in the mix now. So
right, yeah. The thing is now, I think for her in that division, since she's already like that in that latter half of that top five.
Yeah,
it's going to be either number one contender fight, maybe.
I can see it.
And then maybe a title fight if she wins, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Because she's a big enough name where I think she can definitely get right back into a title shot. So it wouldn't be out of the question at all.
And she's exciting enough. She does have knockout power, and she doesn't mind standing up and throwing hands.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the top five now outside of Wei Li, but I mean, Biao Xiaonan and Tatiana Suarez, Jessica Andrade, you know.
Wait, isn't Xiaonan finna fight soon?
I believe she is. Yeah. She's number one ranked. And when's her next fight? Her last fight was in November.
I know she's fighting soon. I think she might be headlining.
April 12th. Yes.
She's headlining, right?
314 against here we go, Yandere Oba. So that's like three and four right there.
Yeah. Ooh, that's fire right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's a 1-3 fighting. So yep. that's the number one contender fight right there. So that would be kind of crazy.
Yeah, and Lemos is 4, right?
She's 5, but after, I don't know if that's been updated yet. Actually, it has. She stayed at 5 because Lucinda went down 1 after the loss.
Oh, okay. So that's fair. 5.
Yeah, top 5. I'll take that.
Yeah.
This next fight, Ignacio Bahamondes and Jalen Turner.
Man, this fight, this is what we learned after the fight. And I think this had a lot to do with, this affected how the fight went, I should say. So we learned after the fight, maybe even there might have been rumors before the fight that Jalen Turner has been contemplating retirement before he signed this fight against a very dangerous Bahamondes. So that being said, Bahamondes went in there with a mission, and it was to get him out of there ASAP, whether it was with the hands or grappling, jiu-jitsu, whatever the case would be. Get him out of there ASAP. And I think right away, Bahamondes knew the easiest way to victory would be by submission, because Jalen Turner has power.
Yes.
And I think Jalen Turner earned that respect right away from Bahamondes. And Bahamondes got him to the ground, locked in that triangle, and it was pretty much over. It locked in pretty deep, and Jalen Turner didn't have anything else to do but to tap, or else he was going night-night. But that being said, Jalen Turner, I hope he doesn't retire, because I think he has so much left in the tank. He's not even 30 yet.
That's true.
Tough losses. And to his defense, against some pretty talented fighters.
Yeah, big names, pretty big names.
And I don't know if I mentioned it before, but I'll mention it again. I think it's best for him to move up to 170.
I could see that. He's got the frame for it.
That's what I'm saying. He definitely has a frame. He'll be cutting a lot less weight. And from what I have seen and what I have heard about how how big he is outside of camp.
Nice.
He's almost the size of Khamzat Chimaev. I saw a picture of them training together, and he's definitely taller, and he looked almost as wide, as bulky. So I don't know, man. Maybe he needs to move up. Maybe he'll find better success at 170, but I would hate if he were to retire as a fan.
Yeah, it's still a young career, 14-9. I mean, that's mostly we're still getting started at that point. So.
What's his name? Charles Oliveira lost, I don't know how many fights to begin his career.
So many fights.
And now no one wants to fight him. No one wants to fuck with him.
I mean, it's the effort, it's the trading, it's the work. It's the opponent too. Styles make fights, like you said.
Yep.
This one, yeah, if your head isn't on 100%, you going into an octagon against someone like a Bahamondes,
you're getting finished.
You're getting finished. Like, we've seen it so many times. Sorry. And I like Bahamondes, because you and I were talking about this fight, like, someone's getting knocked out. Bahamondes was like, we just switched the game plan up. And like you said, I like that he recognized it and just said, triangle, on the ground. He got it quick, too.
Quick.
But that was something where you thought you knew his game going into this. He's showing you he's got versatility for days.
Oh, yeah, because he was known as a knockout artist.
Exactly. Now he's an all-rounder, and that's a different problem. So he's going to be rising up the ranks. I think Bahamondes is a name to really keep an eye on. It was short, but I was mighty impressed.
Oh, yeah, because you mentioned it. He has the frame. He's also tall as shit, 6'3".
Yes.
Striking, has the power, showing you he can grapple, man. He's going to be a problem in this division. I would love for him to fight like a Dan Hooker.
It's always Dan Hooker. That's like always our pick for somebody like, oh, Dan Hooker would be great for that. Like, because so many styles. He's so great.
Man, or like a Dustin Poirier.
Oh, shit. I still think Poirier knocks Jalen Turner the fuck out.
But... Oh, no. I was talking about Bahamondes.
Oh, thank God. Okay, I was like,
No, Bahamondes.
Bahamondes. Oh, yeah. That'd be great. I'd like that a lot.
Yes, sir.
Give me more of those fights. This next fight was an interesting one. Justin Gaethje and Rafael Fiziev. You may tell the fans about that one, sir.
Man, this one was almost as good as the first fight.
Mm-hmm.
This one was a little more lopsided, though. Now, for those of you who don't know, Fiziev actually took this fight on short notice because Dan Hooker, I think he broke his wrist or broke his hand.
Something like that. Was it like two weeks notice?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And it's Dan Hooker. He ain't gonna cap about this shit. Right. If he can't fight, then something bad happened.
Lost a foot and shit.
Yeah, some shit.
Maybe.
Maybe. He might show up still.
Right. One-legged ass kicking contest.
But this fight, man, I mean, you got Fazeev, who throws hands, will stand in the ring and throw hands, Muay Thai champion. Justin Gaethje does not give a shit, balls to the wall all the time. But Gaethje came out with and was a little more calculated this fight. And you could tell in the first round, he wasn't as active. He didn't throw those big chopping leg kicks that he normally throws to start a fight. He was really getting his reads on Fazeev. You know him, he never moves out the way or tries to dodge a punch. He'll just eat that shit. So he was sitting there eating punches, trading punches with Fazeev. And then in the second round, something happened where they were in close combat and Justin Gaethje ducks to his right, and he notices something, and he kind of Muay Thai hooks with his left hand.
Yep.
Rafael Fazeev, and gives Fazeev a taste of his own medicine. Ooh. And gives him a nice close range
fucking tiger uppercut
right on the money, right on the jaw.
I yelled when I saw that shit. I was in bed watching that. I was like, holy shit.
It was textbook Muay Thai uppercut. It was beautiful to watch.
Oh my God. Picture perfect.
Drops Fazeev. Only thing that didn't happen was him knocking Fazeev out.
I was impressed at that point. I said, holy shit.
And I was impressed Fazeev didn't get finished after that.
Yeah, like, what the hell?
So shout out to Fazeev for that. Shout out to Fazeev for surviving. But that really, that ended the fight right there.
Yeah,
it wasn't a finish, but it was a finish.
Yeah, it was a statement.
Justin Gaethje, way to bounce back from that knockout win. Now, if you get a decision win, like I always say, this is how you get a decision win. This is how a decision win should look.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. That uppercut was a Hall of Famer. That's how clean it was.
Oof.
I felt that through my fucking screen. So
yes.
As soon as he got that hook on his arm, I'm glad you mentioned the hook around his neck, because I was like,
yes.
Once I saw that, I'm like, oh no. And he
good
just
night.
From like 7 feet down under just came with a thunder. It's like, whoa. But yes, shout out Fazeev. A lot more game in this fight. Because like we said, last fight, I mean, I thought Gaethje just beat his ass from pillar to post. But this one was more like Fazeev had a game plan. He gave him some problems, especially with the quick takedowns right from the jump. So I think
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I think the game plan was a lot crisper for Fazeev. They did their homework on Gaethje, and I think it really showed, because this is a different fighter than you saw before. Again, I had no doubt Gaethje was going to win this, but Fazeev made this a fucking fight. He made it into an actual war, and even Gaethje then was looking at him like, damn, he had none but respect for the man. So it was. I enjoyed the fight. Again, it wasn't like as lopsided as, you know, some people had it out to be, but like this was just a great scrap. And with Gaethje, like I said, he's still that motherfucker. That's all he's throwing. He never slowed down. He never slowed down. And that was the Gaethje I still think can be an undisputed champion, not an interim champion, an undisputed champion. If he fights like the way he fights now, he's
with that power, he's always game.
Yes, he's always ready. If you have a person like Gaethje who is a bona fide, like, fight of the night, fight of the week, fight of the year contender, usually when he comes to the octagon, yeah, success is going to happen pretty soon. So I'm a big fan. I love the fight. That uppercut will live in my memory forever. And, man, we'll go from there for Gaethje. I think contendership is next for him.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I don't know. Well, Ilya said he wants to just fight for the belt. I don't know if they're just going to – I don't know if it's signed yet or what, but – Ilya versus Gaethje?
Yes, I want to see it.
Let me make the fights.
I'm telling you, man, you need to get on some booking. I don't know what kind of job, but it's always, you got that spice when you make your little fights here. So I'm like, I gotta see it.
I remember, man, all the way back to when we first started doing this, man. I remember I called Drickus and Whitaker.
Yes, I remember that shit too.
Man, from there on, this has been calling some firefights, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. The main event was an interesting one. Light heavyweight championship on the line. Magomed Ankalaev taking on Alex Pereira. And this one, again, we both had Pereira like being the guy, almost a can't-miss bet. Explain how this fight went for the folks who didn't watch it.
Man, so before I get into what happened during the fight, I must say, Ankalaev is a southpaw, and Alex Pereira historically has had more problems with southpaws. I wouldn't say he struggles with them because he's finished some high-level southpaws in Jamahal Hill and Khalil Rountree, but he has more problems with them, and it showed again in this fight. Ankalaev, what he did, first of all, he's southpaw, like I mentioned, and what he did was he immediately took the center of the octagon, pushed Alex back against the cage, something Alex is not used to. Normally, Alex is the one pushing his opponent back towards the cage. But he took the center of the octagon, Ankalaev, pushed Alex back towards the fence, and then he also controlled the footing. And what I mean by that is the outside lead foot battle between a southpaw and a orthodox fighter. When a fighter, whether orthodox or southpaw, has that outside foot advantage, meaning your outside foot, your lead foot is outside of their lead foot, that leads your backhand, your power hand, wide open for a shot right down the pipe. And that also takes away the opposing fighter's lead hand. And if you know anything about Alex Pereira, his power is actually in his lead hand. It's his left hook. And so with Ankalaev doing that and implementing that in his game plan, that really gave him control of this fight. And he executed that game plan to a T. Rewatching this fight, I understand and I see and I know how Ankalaev won this fight. When this fight first ended, I thought Alex won. Long story short, bunch of shit happened. Alex got caught with some shots. Alex tried to make a comeback. Was too late.
Yeah, you and I were split on this a little bit.
Yeah, to begin with. But then I rewatched it. But my question is, this is what I really want to talk about with this fight. Because I'm pretty sure this fight's already going to be talked about. This is what I want to bring up, conversation after the fight. If we are going to credit Ankalaev for unsuccessfully attempting 12 takedowns, are we going to credit Alex Pereira for successfully defending all 12 takedowns?
I think you should. But does that happen?
Are we going to, though? And I want your honest opinion. I'll save my thoughts. Are we going to, and why?
When you say we, I want to know specifically, do you mean do I count it or should the judges count it?
I would say, obviously, it starts with the judges in the UFC first, right?
Yeah.
Because once they take that into effect, I think it'll trickle down and domino effect to the fans and people like us. Mm-hmm. But if you're, well, I will say this, I'll admit this, I'm very biased to strikers.
I mean, I get that.
So when a striker is over here defending a takedown, doesn't allow someone to take him down, and at the same time is neutralizing the wrestler's offense because the wrestler's not doing anything.
Exactly.
But trying to take him down, but he can't take me down.
Yeah.
So that's
I'll answer this way. The way I see it, yes, you absolutely should be counting takedown defenses because it's mixed martial arts. If you strike somebody and they block it, you're not counting the strike attempts at them. You're counting how many times they got hit, period. So if someone is a mixed martial artist and they have a wrestling part of that mixed martial art and they are attempting a takedown and you stuff it actively, not if they slip or something, but if you actively are shooting them down and keeping them from taking you down, I think it should count. Now, looking at the judges' scorecards, it's at 47-48 Ankalaev, 47-48 Ankalaev, 46-49 Ankalaev. And I go, I'm not sure where 46-49 came from. And that was a little crazy. See, that's where I'm like, do the judges count that? No, I think they absolutely should. But in this case, with Pereira, yeah, he stopped it all. But I'm also somebody who, number one, I loathe, despise when championships are changed on decisions. It drives me nuts. I know it's part of the game. Drives me nuts. I like seeing a champion either defend it with honor or get knocked the fuck out and die on their sword. I love that shit. I'm an old warrior. With judges, you get too much of this stat bullshit. And I go, who looked like the better fighter? Who controlled more of the match? This one was so fucking even, not because they were just both skill even, but just like Pereira was stuffing takedowns. They were both getting shots in. This was almost down to the fucking wire at this point. If it wasn't for maybe a little bit less cage time against the actual cage walls, this probably is a different fight. But the fact that Uncle Lyle was able to keep Pajera like on the cage for a lot of time, it's like, I don't know if I consider that counting towards a win or not, but I'm not a judge. So that's the shitty part about it. That's why I'd rather just knock him the fuck out. There should be no question about that. That being said, with these scores and the way I saw it, I think you do rematch right away. I think you have to. Between these two guys, you got to settle this shit first.
I thought it was pretty evident that he did lose Pajera, but...
But as a champion, though, it's... Okay, put it this way. I've seen other champions not lose their titles because judges usually don't like giving a title on a decision this closely. So, yeah, did Pajera do his best? No. But do I think he just outright lost? I don't know. I was very split about it, which is why I'm just like, I almost feel like if I was a judge, I would have kept the belt on Pajera, but like maybe do a rematch again or just call it a draw and do a rematch. But like this one was really fucking close for me.
No, honestly, like I immediately after watching the fight, I thought Pajera won. But after, like I said, after watching that, I changed my mind and I truly believe that Uncle Life did win.
And maybe I need a second review because I've only seen it the one time active and I was like, oh.
I think I was just mad that I watched that over the Pistons. To be honest with you.
You were salty about that. This mid-ass fucking car.
Oh, man. But like you said, Uncle Live controlled the fight, and where Uncle Live really surprised me was the striking. Yeah. I thought he landed the heavier strikes on Pajera, and that's what won him the fight, in my opinion. The failed takedown attempts, honestly, if he didn't land some of those strikes, he might have lost.
Right.
But he did land those strikes, and so that's why I say, okay, Uncle Life, you did get this win.
Yeah.
Fuck those takedown attempts. Like, I get it's still fighting, and at the end of the day, that's still control time. I understand that. But I actually, like we just mentioned, I would give more of those points to Pajera in defending those takedowns. But, man, immediate rematch right away. We need to see this shit.
Yeah, I think that's really the only match. And you should the look on Dana White's face when they said the live and won, he was so fucking mad. That fucking gravy train was out the station. He saw it leave.
Yep.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. And again, no disrespect to Uncle Lyev. When it comes to marketable stars, there's no comparison. Boateng is a superstar. Those chants in that fucking arena were deafening. That dude is one of those. And he doesn't even have to say much. That's how dope ahead is. That's how much respect I have for the man. He barely talks. He doesn't have to. And they market the shit out of that guy. So, like,
he says one word.
That's it. And everyone's like, yeah. I'm on board.
That he's the man. Yeah.
He's the man. He's fucking, the aura speaks volumes. So yeah, Dana White, I don't think is going to just let his cash cow go without gold for a long period of time here. So do not be surprised if we get a rematch with the quickness, possibly even this year. I wouldn't be surprised. Oh my God. So I didn't keep track of any of that. We were both wrong about Pajera. So we got to take a shot for that one at least.
Yep. Hold up.
I
actually took Jalen Turner too.
Oh, that's right. You did.
Yeah. I took Jalen Turner too.
Yeah.
But you know, it's crazy. I took Bahamondes in my parlay.
Hey, hedge your bets, man.
Yeah.
Either you drinking or you gambling. Hey, it's all good.
All right, man. Here you go. Here's one.
Oof, that was a large shot.
More this weekend, right?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got the wife's birthday coming up this weekend. So, yes, it's going to be a lovely time for all.
Ooh, man. All right, man.
I got to
take this for Alex.
Yes, sir. Boateng.
Chama.
What a champ. Oh, that was a huge shot. Oh, my God.
Woo. Awesome.
All right. That being said, let's transition into the meat and potatoes of the episode, because that thing that we were talking about that kept us from doing a two-year anniversary episode this week is NFL free agency period. And most people go through this period and say, okay, it's usually fun. Christmas morning, what kind of presents are you getting for your team? Who are you signing? Who are you getting rid of? This free agency period has gone off the fucking rails in like 48 hours. It's been absolutely crazy. There's been so many different transactions and trades and moves and signings. And I want to just cover some of it, some of your favorites, some of the most ridiculous ones, some ones you're excited about, some ones you hate. So whatever you want to talk about in this period is up to you, but it's been an insane couple of days. The league looks shaken up. So let's take a look at some of the transactions. And I want you to start before any of the ones you have with the guy who kind of set this whole thing off, in Myles Garrett.
All right, man. So this one, I don't know how to feel about this one. Because I'm all for dudes getting their money. I really am. But when you come out and say that you are in a position in your career where you want to win and prioritize winning, and you and the organization have come to the mutual agreement that the organization is not on the same page as you are, why are you re-signing for more money? Do you really want to win? Or was that just part of your negotiating tactics? I mean, if it was part of your negotiating tactics, that's cool. But just let that be known. Like, if you really want to win, you ain't going to play for the Cleveland Browns. Mm. And don't get me wrong, Myles Garrett, great player. Like I said, always go ahead and get your money. But it's just like, yo, if you're just trying to get paid, just go get paid. That's the biggest thing. And I don't know what the Browns are doing. They keep handing people bags, handicapping themselves for the future, knowing damn well they're just trying to patch up all these leaks in this sinking ship that's been sinking for years and years and years. Mm.
Well, then easily Myles Garrett was the biggest name to request a fucking trade. And he was a talk of the town this entire time of where so many articles. Where's his best places that he should end up? And is he going to get a ring somewhere? And after all these people got signed, he just kind of goes, you know what? Maybe it's not so bad in Cleveland. If you're not going to get a ring, you might as well get paid. And 4 years and $160 million with $123.5 guaranteed.
Guaranteed.
Unbelievable. So that makes him the highest paid non-quarterback in the league. Just like that. But he's just Cleveland's like he's Cleveland's guy from here on out. And be careful what you wish for, bro, because you wanted to go play with a quarterback, and now you get Kenny Pickett.
You want to win. You want to win. Oh, you won.
You won, all right. I had to do a freeze frame on that one. But there's another guy who was in the same boat as Myles Garrett by the name of DK Metcalf. What happened with DK, dude?
Yo, okay, so DK requested a trade, and his ass got sent to Pittsburgh.
Make no mistake, he wanted to go somewhere warm.
He wanted to go somewhere warm where he could wear those crop tops year-round. Mm-hmm. But instead, he got sent to blue-collar Pittsburgh with Mike Tomlin and crash out George Pickens.
Woo!
I cannot wait for him and George Pickens to throw tantrums on the sidelines.
Yes.
That's going to be the best shit ever.
I can't wait.
And I wonder who's going to be throwing them the ball.
Funny you mentioned that, because we'll talk about it in a second, but they are down a quarterback, and now they get to decide whether they're going to stick with Russell Wilson or, as all the smoke would have you believe, Aaron Rodgers is a potential signing for the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm not sure what the difference is between these two men are, especially record-wise, but that's me. I personally said about that Pickens thing, I'm praying the Steelers get Hard Knocks this year. Because
so
I just
much
see
shit
them.
Will be talked.
I just want to see the drama between those two. They're either going to try to kill each other or they're going to kill everybody else on the fucking team. I want to see it. And how Tomlin deals with it all, that sounds like a sitcom. I need to see that Hard Knocks. Fuck everything else. Give me that one. And they're both number 14. Who's getting number 14? They going to fight over it? Probably.
That's a great question, man.
Don't know. You would think it's Pickens, but it's don't know. I think they should maybe fight club, maybe underground boxing ring, Rocky and Apollo style. Just no one needs to watch it. Just
the Def Jam fight for 14.
Exactly. Yes. Just, you know, settle it the way men used to settle things. You know what I mean? That's all I'm saying. My God. That's,
man,
that's amazing. It's amazing that he ended up there.
I don't. Aaron Rodgers is not the answer there.
No. And boy, is that a 180 for you after the Rodgers and the Jets last year. And you were all aboard.
Yeah.
Now,
time
is a bitch.
What that weak ass team put on film, yeah. Yep. I always go off film. So
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Yeah. But speaking of those Jets, they have a new quarterback, and his name is Justin Fields. Now, 2 years, $30 million.
Now we finally get to a point in the show where we can talk about someone doing some good shit.
All right.
The New York Jets got rid of some garbage that was fucking up their organization. I mean, it's been fucked up for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And they brought in someone who is familiar with their franchise offensive player. That being Garrett Wilson. Quarterback Justin Fields from Ohio State played alongside Garrett Wilson from Ohio State. You know, back when Garrett Wilson was universally considered as the best wide receiver in that draft. Yeah, his quarterback throwing him the ball. Yeah, it was Justin Fields.
That guy.
That dude. So last year, if I'm not mistaken, he went 5-1 as a starter. 5-1, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe you're right.
I forgot how many I think he had 15 total touchdowns, if I'm not mistaken. And I think he had four picks.
He, let's see, 1,100 yards, averaged 6.9, had 5 touchdowns, 1 pick.
Sacked
16 times. God damn.
Damn.
Yeah. And 5 touchdowns, 6 fumbles, 1 lost. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. So, I'm sorry. 2 turnovers, 10 touchdowns.
Yes. There you go.
The Jets will be just fine, man. Before I get off of the Jets real quick, I just wanted to say their head coach is Aaron Glenn from the Detroit Lions. Aaron Glenn will have this shit turned around, headed into the right direction. Will the Jets be a playoff team next year? Probably not. But I'll tell you this, the Jets will be a tough, tough 7-10 team to face. The Jets are going to be molded in the same identity as these Detroit Lions. They're going to play stylistically almost identical, where it's going to be smash mouth football. I'm going to work harder than you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Eventually, you're going to dwindle, and eventually, I'm just going to take control over this fight. That's how these Jets are going to play. They're going to lean on Justin Fields in the run game and Breece Hall, and they're going to have those big plays from Garrett Wilson every now and then. And then on defense, you already know, they got Sauce Gardner locking up. They got Quinn and Williams. That defense is still one of the best in the league. That was never the issue for them.
No.
Ever. It was always leadership. Aaron Glenn checked that off. Quarterback play. Justin Fields, I don't care what anyone says. Before he even plays a snap for the Jets, check that off.
Yeah, I definitely feel that Fields on the Jets is a much better fit for the future than Rodgers ever was. I don't care what y'all are trying to do with that fucking team. Old man washed up Rodgers. You can't convince me is better than a young prospect who's got legs, who's shown you he can win. He just needs the right opportunity. And then you come in and he's got a great defense already and some offensive weapons you can add to. So, like, it's not a bad situation. I know it's the Jets, but it's not a bad situation for what Fields brings to the table. So I actually really like the move. He could have went quite a few places. I think the Jets gives him, especially because I'm a fan of him, it gives him the best opportunity to really finally make a name for himself as a starting quarterback without having to look over his shoulder at somebody. So
imagine in a couple seasons, he brings this team to the playoffs.
Look at that.
How are we going to talk about Justin Fields now? Because he brought the fucking New York Jets to the play. I'm just saying, hypothetically, yeah. Man, this can do wonders for his career.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And 2 years, $30 million is actually good for what he was going to get for a value.
That's good for him, and that's good for the Jets. The Jets can put a nice team around him, fix that offensive line, do some real good shit.
Absolutely. I like it. Here's something I don't like. Your favorite team, the San Francisco 49ers, decided to blow it all up.
Wait, you don't like that? I love that.
Oh, did I say I didn't like it? I mean, I fucking love it. Because fuck the Niners. I'm sick of the Niners. Y'all made me think y'all were going to be some great fucking dynasty, and you blew it. But now they blew it up. Getting rid of, in no particular order, Dre Greenlaw, Tre'Varius Ward, Talanoa Hufanga, Aaron Banks, Jalen Moore, and Deebo Samuel. And they kept Brock Purdy.
They're going to pay him plenty of bucks.
Yes. This is to clear up space to pay Purdy long term. I know you got McCaffrey. What was the problem with the defense? You had some studs on that side, and you got rid of all of them.
All of them.
what's the plan here? It's not like your division got any worse. So what's the idea, Niners? It makes no fucking sense.
They must really believe in Brock Purdy, man.
Man, as someone who was on the Purdy wagon,
I told you.
You definitely told me, but I had to see it for myself to go, oh, this is fool's gold. This was a kid with the keys to the Ferrari, as we like to say on the show a lot. So
this is Ryan Fitzpatrick, if you will.
Oh, don't you say that about Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's my boy.
Hey, but let's be real. Him and Brock Purdy, they're about on the same level.
They're the same level. I get you. But Fitzmagic did it with some fucking pizzazz, though, man.
and that just goes to show you how underrated Fitzpatrick was and absolutely how overrated Purdy is.
Yeah, not wrong at all. Fitzmagic's my boy forever and always. So, but I get your point. Talent-wise, I mean, yeah, you're getting the same guy. But I don't see what Purdy has shown you to give you this much belief in him long term. So we'll see what this contract extension looks like when he gets down to it. But from the names I'm seeing that have been released from this team, it is not worth it. That window, I'm sorry, is now closed. And McCaffrey's my boy. And as long as you have McCaffrey, you always have a chance. Don't get it twisted. You need the rest of the team. Some of those defensive players are studs. And you,
Tavarius Ward?
Are you kidding me? Like, I don't get it. I don't get that strategy. And a couple other teams have blown it up this free agency period too, that I'll get to into a second. But yeah, Niners, what the fuck? Wow. Another team that decided to blow it up, and reports have been coming out about why.
Oh, wait. But before we get off of this, we should talk about where Debo went.
Ooh, go ahead, sir.
So someone thought it was a fantastic idea to give Jaden Daniels some more weapons. So the San Francisco 49ers and John Lynch just decided to send Debo Samuel, who is a pretty nice offensive weapon, I would say, positionless offensive player in the NFL, I would say. Decided to ship him for maybe a couple fifth and third round picks to the Washington fucking Commanders.
What are you thinking?
So now he's playing with Terry McLaurin, Jaden Daniels, Austin Eckler, Brian Robinson, a rejuvenated Zach Ertz.
Woo.
Man, look out for the Commanders.
They ain't going nowhere. And I'm glad you brought them up, because that's what I was going to next. Not necessarily the Commanders, but it's got something to do with them. The Houston Texans also decided to blow their offensive lineup. I want to put a stat out for you real quick, folks, in case you didn't see the Texans last year. Their quarterback, Dynamite C.J. Stroud, was sacked 52 times in 2024.
You thought Caleb had a bad.
Exactly. 55-2 times last year. And so through all of that, y'all decided to get rid of the one good lineman you had, and the Texans traded Laremy Tunsil also to the Commanders to protect Jaden Daniels. What are you thinking? What are you thinking? Jaden Daniels is probably doing cartwheels in his garage and air kicks like karate class. Are you kidding me? He went for a second and a fourth rounder for a great offensive lineman. Then on top of that, the Texans, they traded Kenyon Green, admittedly terrible last year, but still consistency, to the Eagles for a fifth round pick, to the Eagles for a sixth round pick, and CJ Gardner-Johnson, which, okay, that's a great pickup, but you're still killing your offensive line. They also cut Shaq Mason from the line too. So three of your starting offensive linemen from last year are gone, including Tunsil, who anybody would want on their team. I would have loved, are you kidding? For a second and a fourth?
That's he could be an all pro every year. He could be.
We need a left tackle. I would have cried if we gotten Tunsil. Like,
man,
Jaden Daniels is going to be cushy next year.
Look, I don't.
More dangerous than he was this year.
I don't know if the Commanders just went by and they were just knocking on people's door like they were selling Girl Scout cookies, and they were like, hey, yo, we're trying to win a Super Bowl. Would you like to help us out? A small donation of Laremy Tunsil would help.
Right.
Thank you. Right. Now, you, John Lynch, we're also selling Girl Scout cookies, and a small donation of Debo Samuel would really help.
Just a small, little sample.
And they're just getting everything they asked for.
Right. No resistance at all. Team-friendly trades, mid-round picks. This is like the Eagles in the last couple of years with Howie Roseman. Do the Commanders have picks with somebody now? Because now they're starting to get these pieces that make no fucking sense in trades, but are going to help them dramatically. And they were already damn good last year. So y'all can say sophomore slump all you want. I'm going to knock on wood and hope we don't see it because I want to see more. Daniels is out there slinging it all rock all day. So with some protection, with some better weapons, yeah, y'all better get ready for Commanders to be like a legitimate Super Bowl threat.
Man, I told y'all about that kid.
You were right. I told you that was the biggest call you've had on the show was how right you were about Jaden Daniels.
That kid, man.
Everyone doubted you.
That kid, that kid is special. Like he got it.
Crazy. I'm a believer. I was somebody because when you're on my level and you're looking at quarterbacks in the draft, you get all the hype and you fall for marketing and you listen to scouts you shouldn't be listening to. So I was somebody who was like, I didn't see what you saw at that point, but watching him all season, I said, damn.
That's what I've been seeing.
Damn.
Right there, yeah. That's like, why I said, yeah, that's number one pick.
Like, holy shit.
I even said I would have taken him over C.J. Stroud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's saying a lot because C.J. Stroud, y'all know how I feel. I called him the best quarterback in that draft too.
Fantastic. So, he's fantastic. Yeah. So, man, oh, man. We'll see. But I'm glad they're giving him an offensive line, giving him some protection because he's going to need that for his longevity of his career. And I bring that up as a seamless transition to the team that I represent, the Chicago Bears. Because speaking of offensive lines, if you know anything about the Bears, it's the one thing that we just can't seem to get right, no matter what we do.
Don't have?
We never had it. And when we tried to get it, it all fell apart. The closest thing I've seen to a can't miss was Kyle Long, and that motherfucker couldn't keep his knees on straight. Like,
that shit is...
And that was years ago. So, like...
Cody Whitehair?
See what I'm saying? He's already gone still. So, like... But that's the thing. Is Cody Whitehair was a center. So, like, the center was, like, the best thing we had. Like, the dude snapping the ball. That was the dude
not the dude out there paid millions to block the blind side. No, not him.
Just the guy goes, here you go. That's about it. So, the Bears have desperately needed that for years and years. And I'm not going to put it on Virginia McCaskey passing away. I'm not going to put it on Ben Johnson even, or good juju, or the football god smiling on us. Whatever. The Bears are finally listening to the fans. We've been begging them to invest in their quarterback. You've been telling us that Caleb's the guy. And you told us that Justin Fields is the guy. And you told us that every other person who's come through here is the guy. But you never protect them. They're finally protecting him. The Bears went ahead and traded a 6th-round pick for Jonah Jackson from the Rams. Cool. Solid
former
piece.
Former Detroit Lion.
Well, I'll say, you know him from Detroit? Solid piece. When he's healthy, great player. When he's not, kind of sucks. But it's still miles ahead of what the Bears had. Cool. That was one. He was more of a left guard. He'll slip over to right guard. He can do both. Not a big deal. But then, the Bears made another deal. And they sent a 4th-rounder next year, 2026. Joe Thuney, all pro, is now a Chicago Bear. I said, are you kidding me? Y'all can say what you want about his age. That man's still one of the best in the league to this day. Multiple Super Bowls. That guy is protecting my quarterback now.
All pro, pro bowler.
All pro, pro bowler. Are you kidding me? That guy is fantastic. So, some protection there. Some protection. But the Bears weren't done. Then they looked at Atlanta and said, you know what? You guys have a great center. Up and coming. By the name of Drew Dolman. We would like to have him too. Signed Drew Dolman as well. So, out of nowhere, the interior of offensive line is now set with actual talent, not the giant craters that we had last year. You were
not for running backs to run through.
Nope. For how many Colts did we see? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them get right past the line.
Oh, Zaire Franklin was all over the backfield.
Woo-hoo-hoo. Just making a living nightmare happen because of our Swiss cheese offensive line. Those days are done. Now, that being said, we did other things on defense too. We signed Grady Jarrett. Love that guy. Again, a little bit older, but you know what? Veteran presence, leadership. That guy was the face of the Falcons defense for the last decade. Like, we need leadership on that line to teach the young cats, get them up to speed, get what we need from them. Not to mention the fact that Jarrett can still play like a dog. So he brings a lot to that room. And then Dayo Odengbo from the Colts, up and coming. Another edge rusher that can definitely help us. Now, again, they paid him a little more for his stature, but he's got loads of potential. He was like one of the best rushers on that defense for the Colts. So, like, we're getting the protections we need. The people on these defensive packages that we're going to need, the personnel is going to be a lot better, especially under a Dennis Allen-led defensive scheme. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do with that. But make no mistake about it, folks. A lot of the Bears fans out there are saying, oh, well, we got everything we need. We can go best player available in the draft now at number 10. And I said, stop it. Stop it. All the Ash and Jaunty shit. Trust me, I get it. Having a running back of that caliber with this offensive line and Ben Johnson at the helm, who we know loves that Sonic and Knuckles pairing. Yeah, Jaunty and Swift would be a very fun watch every Sunday. I'm not going to lie. I had the same notion last year in the draft when we looked at Odunze, and I said, that's a sexy pick. We don't need the sexy picks in Chicago. We need actual depth. We need actual trenches because we're dying on the lines here. I don't care who we sign this offseason. If y'all don't pick a lineman at number 10, you're fools. Fools. Joe Thuney's great. He's also in his 30s, okay? He's not a long-term solution. He's got plenty of football left. He's going to do great things for us. Y'all need to invest in the future. And we, in my opinion, still have a hole on that line at left tackle. It's just how it is right now. So, like, Darnell Wright on the right side, good, solid guy for us. Braxton Jones, though, isn't showing me enough. As a depth piece, he's a lot better. Go get me Will Campbell from LSU, and we'll talk about that in our draft preview again because I'm going to put my foot down on that shit too. Give me the left tackle I have been dying to have, and let's actually make a run for this. There's plenty of running backs we can get. Jaunty is fun and all, almost breaking the damn college football rushing record held by the legendary Barry Sanders, of course. He was 27 yards short of that record. Tremendous athlete. However, that's a sexy pick. I don't want any sexy picks for the Bears. I want boring. I want Amish. Just, I want you to give us like a D-. Oh, they picked a lineman with a number 10? Fuck yeah, because you know why?
No salt.
No salt. I want like that taste of Delaware. It's back, folks. I want the taste of Delaware in this draft. Don't give me none of that fried chicken, bro. Give me mayonnaise and white milk. Corn-fed beef on that line. That's the only thing I give a shit about. Because if we don't get that, this is all for nothing. It's all for nothing. Lineman, and then give me another lineman. Give me three. I don't give a shit. Give me three linemen, and then make them all rotate. I don't care. But I want the Great Wall of China in front of Caleb Williams. There's no more excuses for that shit. There, I'm off my soapbox now.
No, man. That's completely fair. No, that's the biggest weakness of the team. And to see the Bears improving their offensive line, I mean, it's got to be very encouraging from a Bears fan's point of view. So it's definitely a good look. I mean, Joe Thuney, he will, you know, immediate day one impact type of player. It definitely does open some things up for the draft and what the Bears could really do.
Yes.
Because what I'm thinking is they stay put at 10 and then they pull some Detroit Lions shit where they trade back up into the latter half of the first round to get a running back that slid in the draft. And that's probably going to be Mr. Ashton Jeanty himself.
Man, if he fell and we got him, that's a different story. But at 10, I'm like,
No.
We still have needs. We still have other needs.
They're going to go Bears. Knowing Ben Johnson and just the history of the Detroit Lions and where he came from, how we drafted, Bears will, with 10, they'll probably go need, like absolute need. So whether that's tackle or corner.
Yeah, I could see it. If anything, they still got to find Montez Sweat a partner. So, like, I know we got the couple of guys. Yeah, Dale is good. I don't know if he's brought in to be that guy or a rotational piece. I don't know. The way he's paid, I'm assuming he's a starter.
And going yeah, they're paying him like it, yeah.
But I want more. I want the not the 85 Bears defense. I was going to say, give me like the 2018 Bears defense when we had Khalil Mack. Give me that defense where we just punch everyone in the mouth. We can't have too many defensive pieces. No. I would still take either of those two over a running back at 10.
At 10. Yeah, I get it. Yeah, of course. Of course, yeah.
Everything else, fair game. Go for it.
Yeah.
That's a nice feeling to have, too.
Yeah, no, I'm sure, man. Coming for you from where you guys were from, man, I mean, this is night and day.
Exhausting.
Because it's like no longer are you guys getting these redundant free agents who you know are just there to collect a check and not make any type of impact on winning. Now it's like, oh, yeah. Shit, Joe Thuney?
Like, I was like, I know that name.
You talking about like the dude that's like 90 overall on Madden?
Yeah, like that guy.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay.
Oh, shit. Yes. We're not getting some dude from Yale in the eighth round.
that we're paying $15 to $17 million right. a year for.
Fucking Western Michigan. Yes, I went there. We'll see. Again, I'm happy with who we've gotten, but I'm not running laps yet. I'm still reserving judgment because it's still the Bears.
That's fair.
Still fuck all this up. I've seen this movie, but these are moves a smart organization makes mostly. So,
oh yeah,
it's I mean, weird.
Ben Johnson came from a smart one, so
that's for damn sure. Mm-hmm. just some last minute quick hits here before we wrap it up that I wanted to bring up. Davante Adams joining the Rams as Cooper Kupp is released. What are your thoughts on the new look Rams?
Man, that's a W. Obviously, that's a big upgrade over Cooper Kupp. And that's no disrespect to Cooper Kupp. I just believe Devontae's still one of the best in this league. I honestly wish that the Rams would have kept Cooper Kupp. Mm-hmm. But since they just gave him away for free 99, I guess the Lions have to come in there and swoop him up real quick. Reunite him with Jared Goff. Yeah, I guess we just got to do that real quick on our Super Bowl run. But anyway.
The Super Bowl run.
I think this is a bittersweet move for the Rams because Cooper Kupp obviously was beloved, especially in that organization, winning the Super Bowl for them, triple crown winner.
Yes.
Super Bowl MVP even.
Yes. Crazy.
And to just watch him get, I guess you can say, given up on.
Yeah. You got nothing for it.
Low-key, it's kind of sad. And I really hope he gets picked up by a winning organization, whether that be the Lions or someone else, and has a ton of success, because I think the Rams did him dirty, if I'm being real.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it.
He's one of those dudes that, in my opinion, he should have retired the Ram.
100%. I totally agree.
Especially with the relationship he's developed with Matthew Stafford over the years and the relationship he allegedly has with Sean McVay.
Yeah.
You would think he would see better treatment, but you know, this is a business and we're seeing it.
It is. It's sad about it because, I mean, yeah, the relationship he has with the organization in general, like just Cooper Kupp is LA, you know, so that just, yeah, it's the game is the game. But I was a little salty about that too. Like, damn, man. But he's somebody I think will land on his feet. I don't know where he's going to go, but he's still got plenty to give to this fucking sport. So,
oh yeah. Oh yeah. Honestly, if you watch their games, it's not that he isn't getting open. He's just not getting targets.
Right. That they just stopped throwing to him.
And I don't know why.
No idea. I know Puka Nacua is a stud, but the whole point was him and Kupp. Like,
exactly. Not DeMarcus Robinson.
Yeah, no, that shit drove me nuts. Like, wait, I think I had a parlay on that day too. I was like, really? This is a Robinson game? What the fuck?
DeMarcus Robinson, man.
What the hell? Yeah, other people who've been let go from organizations that are long term, Tyler Lockett let go from the Seattle Seahawks just right before DK said, fuck it, I'm out too. And then the Seahawks traded Geno Smith to Vegas for a third rounder, and everyone was confused. And then they signed Sam Darnold for $100 million. How do you feel about those two transactions?
Well, the Seahawks, they just signed their life away to mediocrity for the next couple seasons.
Yeah.
There had to be a team. I just hate it had to be them because they have one of the, who I believe is one of the most up and coming stars at wide receiver in Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Mm-hmm. Man, this is unfortunate for their fan base. I'm sorry. Seattle that you guys overpaid for Kirk Cousins' little brother, essentially. Man, this is a sad, sad day for Seattle fans. You guys are better off keeping Geno Smith.
Yes! He played his ass off for them.
And if you're going to move off of him anyway in a couple seasons, why not draft somebody? Let Geno play out his, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Play out his contract, play out his career, if you will, and then hand the reins over. But I guess that makes too much sense, and we got to blow money on these mediocre quarterbacks and pay them like they're better than what they actually are. I guess that's what we're doing.
$100 million for Sam Darnold in 2025. And my thing is, clearly you're basing this off of the Sam Darnold you just saw. Y'all ain't got Justin Jefferson. You don't have Jordan Addison.
And I'm glad you brought that up, man. Because the Sam Darnold we saw week 17 or week 18, I'm sorry, and in the playoffs, that Sam Darnold, how many touchdowns did he generate? Boop. I'm not even sure if he generated two.
You're paying for that guy, but you have none of the stuff that props Sam Darnold to be a mildly successful quarterback this season. So,
and the most important piece is Kevin O'Connell.
Oh, God, yeah. So I'm sorry. I'm not sure what you're paying for here that you didn't already have with Geno, who was already familiar with your entire staff and your playbook and the city. And I just don't get it. I'm not sure what you think you're doing here.
But shout out to Geno because he's reunited with Pete Carroll.
Hell yeah. Go, Geno. Yeah, this is no knock on Geno at all. Geno got a third rounder this year for his value. And y'all had that man dead to rights a few years ago. Geno told all y'all. He told all y'all.
He ain't writing back.
He ain't writing back none of them. So I hope in Vegas he slings it. And him and Brock Bowers, hey, who knows? That could be a recipe for success.
Jacoby Myers?
I'll take it. Not a bad player at all. So, I mean, he's got something there. And you have someone like Tom Brady who wants to funnel money into this fucking organization. So, shit.
Yeah.
Why not?
I don't – obviously, the Raiders aren't going to be competitive. Like, they're not going to be a playoff team for the next few years. But
no.
The energy there, it could change, man. I mean, Geno is a highly respected quarterback in this league.
Yes.
And, you know, Pete Carroll, he's done what he's done. He's solidified and he's a Hall of Famer.
Totally.
Brady's Brady.
Brady's Brady.
And the only impact that this can have on a team is a positive one. So I'm excited to see where they end up.
Same here. I've always had a soft spot for the Raiders. I don't know why.
Yeah, me too. I ain't gonna lie. They remind me a little bit of the Pistons.
Yeah, just like a lot of heart, a lot of scrap. Every time I see them play like against like a rival, I'm like, damn, like Raiders got the little juice.
Yeah.
They just can't get over the hump, you know, but I've always
just waiting for
little...
a fight to happen. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, it's still weird them being in Vegas and not Oakland, but you know, just because of the vibe, but like, yeah, I don't mind the Raiders at all. I got nothing against them. Last little quick hit I wanted to put out there just comes from Connor Livesay on Twitter. Fuck you. I'm never going to call it X. Never, ever, ever. And he put this stat out here that I think is the funniest part that I can end this entire segment and show on. The Cowboys have not signed a free agent over $6 million a year in free agency since Greg Hardy in 2015. And since that time, the salary cap has increased by over $135 million. And I'm over here looking at the tracker, and I'm saying, where are the Cowboys doing? Brian Anger, the punter.
Well, yes. I was going to say, isn't he a punter?
He sure is a punter. Solomon Thomas, where did you dig him up from?
Solomon Thomas. Wow. You talking about the dude that the Bears said, no, we'll take Mitchell Trubisky over.
That guy. Yep.
That guy.
And they both ended up in the same place anyway. So, yeah, again, Cowboys fans, I'm not sure how you have like a billionaire like Jerry Jones who just refuses to invest in that team. He got y'all a nice, nice stadium.
Ooh.
For y'all to just lose in every year in ridiculous ways. And this entire free agency period has blown by. All the big names are pretty much gone. And Dallas is still Dallas. I almost respect the resolve just saying, no, this is our team. We don't need anybody else. You go down with that ship. What's that contract left for Dak?
Oh, man.
Not much time left for a guy who is the most paid in this league.
I was going to say, not much time, but it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money and very little success. I'm sorry, Cowboys fans. It ain't going to happen anytime soon, especially the way y'all sitting there on your hands, not signing anybody. So you talk about sorry Seattle. I'm not sorry, Dallas. You did it to yourselves.
Nah, nobody ever sorry for the Cowboys.
Nope. Couldn't have
the Cowboys are sorry themselves. So
y'all just sorry. With that, sir, it is time for the 2 minute drill. Hit it.
Man, for the 2 minute drill, I've got to talk about some basketball, man. So let's get it. After watching this player play in person, after watching this player play the last few games that he's played, I feel comfortable saying today, Nikola Jokic, he's a top five center to ever play this game. Nikola Jokic is, I can't wait till he retires because he might end up as one of the best center to ever play this game. Not one of the best center to ever play this game. His skill set is so unique. His playmaking, his three-point shooting, his rebounding, the ability to still play in the post as a traditional back-to-the-basket big and still score, the ability to literally raise the level of talent around him. Because if you think about it, his best teammate is Jamal Murray. Jamal Murray ain't never made an all-star team in his life. We need to start putting some respect on Nikola Jokic's name. And I say that because the other day he had a 30-20-20 game, the first in NBA history. What the fuck has someone had 30-20-20? Have you heard of that shit? Not outside of 2K my career.
Never.
And for a center to do it? A center.
Crazy.
To get 20 assists. That means minimum. Nikola Jokic accounted for 70 points minimum, because an assist equals 2 points. So counting three-pointers, he probably accounted for close to 100 points his damn self. So we got to put some damn respect on Nikola Jokic. Old heads, if y'all still complaining about big men, y'all not watching Nikola Jokic enough. Put some damn respect on Nikola Jokic. He's already one of the best bigs to ever play. I can't even name four bigs better than him. And I'll be honest, this might be my hottest take of all time. When it's all said and done, he'll be better than Shaq.
Oh, man. I mean, shit. Hey, y'all should see his face right now. Dead serious. Dead serious.
No smiles. You know me. I like to laugh. Nah.
Right. He said,
I'm dead serious.
He sat back.
He will be better than Shaq when he retires.
The way y'all I see
forgot
it,
about,
man.
Y'all forgot about Shaq that played in Miami? How about the one that played in Phoenix? How about the one that played in Cleveland? How about the one that played in Boston?
Oh.
Y'all forgot about that Shaq? Oh, I didn't.
I didn't forget that guy. Dude's got the rainbow collection of the jerseys he's worn. But yes, Shaq was a menace. But I agree. I mean, Jokic is, goddamn, man. Skilled. Every time I watch him, skilled and lazy. Doesn't give a shit. But he's so skilled. It doesn't even matter.
In person, it looks so effortless. And in person, I will say, he's so much more athletic than what the TV shows. I promise you, in person. And I don't know how these scouts did not see any of this. You telling me you're a professional scout and you didn't see any of this over in Europe? He fell to the second round, got drafted during a Taco Bell commercial. You didn't see any of this?
Never forget the Taco Bell commercial.
Great. You have a job and I don't. Great.
A well-paid job. I'll put it on top of that, too.
Man, I do this shit for free. I'll be telling y'all the real for free.
Right. And that's exactly why. It's for the love of the game. It's the same reason why you can see all this content on YouTube, Facebook, Red Note, and TikTok at The Bank Bros Show. Because for the love of the game, we don't get paid for this shit. We tried getting sponsors for the first year of the show, and nobody said a damn thing. So
we said, fuck
shit.
Y'all.
We said, fuck y'all. We'll do our own. It will make them fun and more inventive than y'all ever came up with anyway. So look at us now, boy. We here 2 years down the line, no sponsors, still kicking it for the love of the game and for the love of y'all. Because the Bank Bros are in your city, here for you as we always are. Bank on that, baby. Come see us next week, 2 year anniversary, coming to you live. Peace out. We'll see you next week.
Where we're headed, no one knows. But if you need some friends, rely on the Bank Bros. Knock, knock.